opening of the Haggadah, actually a preface to the Haggadah, is the paragraph of Halach Ma'anya. Just one very quick short thought, which the Achronim, the Nesivos, the Chasam Sofer, quote from one of the earlier Rishonim of Elazar Ashkenazi in his Haggadah Ma'aseh Hashem, who points out that this paragraph, Halach Ma'anya, unlike the rest of the Haggadah, is written in Aramaic. The Haggadah itself is written in Hebrew. This paragraph, written in Aramaic, clearly is not part of the Haggadah, rather a preface to the Haggadah. The Haggadah itself really starts with Manashtana, She'elo Tshuva, the answer, the question and the answer. So this paragraph obviously is distinct from the rest of the Haggadah. It's simply a preface. So what is the point of this paragraph? So Elazar Ashkenazi suggests that in the first year of the Golus of Klal Yisrael and Bavel, after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, they sat down to the first Pesach Seder, and here they are celebrating their Cheirus, the Geula of yesteryear, and they're suffering through Avdus, through Shibud, through Golus Bavel, and they're so broken. So they say, Halach Ma'anya, this matzah, which ordinarily represents the Geula, Shalo Hispik Vitzekim Shalav Oseinu LaHachmetz, that we didn't have time to let our bread rise and our rush out of Mitzrayim, this matzah, which ordinarily represents Geula, this year, now our first year in Bavel, this matzah is not just poignantly symbolic of Geula, but it's even more so representative of Halach Ma'anya, of the bread of Avdus. Because as we know, matzah represents not just the bread they enjoyed during the Geula because they didn't have time to let it rise, but matzah also represents the Oni, the Shibud, the Avdus in Mitzrayim, because the Mitzrayim would feed their slaves matzah either because it took longer to digest or because they didn't want to bother wasting time from work to let the bread rise, so they made them bake it right away and eat it in the form of matzah. So the matzah really has both components in it, of Avdus and of Zecha L'Cheirus. So the first year in Golus Bavel, Klal Yisrael sit down, and they realize all of a sudden that, you know, this year, more so than ever before, the matzah strikes us as if it is not just Cheirus, but it's very much more felt as the symbol of Avdus. So therefore, they began the Seder with Halach Ma'anya Diacholo Avasana Ba'arati Mitzrayim. The second phrase in that paragraph, Kol Dichvin Yesei V'Yechol, whoever's hungry and wants to partake, whoever wants to come, please join us. Says Rabbi Elazar Ashkenazi, just last year, when the Beis HaMikdash was still around, the din was that when you ate the Korban Pesach, you had to arrange a group to eat it with ahead of time. You couldn't just, you know, pop in one person's house, another person's house. You have to be nimna as part of a chabur. You have to be included as part of a prearranged group that would eat the Korban Pesach, and they had planned this in advance. Now this year they're saying, you know, this year there's no longer any Korban Pesach. This year there's no longer any Korban Pesach. This year there's no longer any Korban Pesach. It's only the, you know, it's the first year after the Korban Habayis. And therefore, there's no restrictions on eating here, eating there. Unfortunately, so to speak, we can go anywhere we want to partake in this Seuda of Leil Pesach. And finally, then, we conclude with Hashata Avdi L'Shana Abba B'nei Chorin. It's almost an optimistic comforting, a nechama, that, you know, this year we're in Golus, but halavai next year we should be back in Yerushalayim. And Rav Elazar Ashkenazi writes that this is all the idea of Imlo Ales Yerushalayim, to constantly be mindful of Yerushalayim, to be thinking of Yerushalayim. What I found interesting was that the Chasam Sofer, after quoting this idea from Rav Elazar Ashkenazi, points out that this is not the only paragraph in Aramaic in the Haggadah. There's one more. Which one is that? One more paragraph in Aramaic in the Haggadah. Chargadja. Ironically, the first and the last, the opening preface to the Haggadah is the Aramaic of Halach Ma'anya, and the closing, concluding paragraph of the entire Lel HaSeder is the Chargadja. The only two paragraphs in Aramaic. Says the Chasam Sofer, along the lines of Elazar Ashkenazi's thought with regard to Halach Ma'anya, that was the preface to the Haggadah. The first year Klal Yisrael were in Golus, when they were in Bavel, where the vernacular was Aramaic, as opposed to Eretz Yisrael, where the vernacular was Hebrew. So too, perhaps he suggests, the Chasam Sofer, that the closing paragraph, the Chargadja, was also composed in Bavel, in Golus Bavel, and therefore it also was written in the vernacular of Bavel, namely in Aramaic. Why was that composed in Bavel? So again, along the same lines as Rav Elazar Ashkenazi, Chasam Sofer suggests, there are numerous explanations as to what Chargadja really is a mashal to. What is really Chargadja all about? So the Chasam Sofer, along these lines, once he has this idea of Rabbi Elazar Ashkenazi that if it's written in Aramaic, it means it was composed in Gaul's Bavel to remember what they had in the Beis HaMikdash in previous years. So Chassam Sofer suggests perhaps the Chagiga as well, composed in Bavel at the beginning of Gaul's Bavel in Aramaic, is a mashal to the karbanos that were brought in previous years on Pesach, the Karban Pesach and the Karban Chagiga. Hence the Chagiga, the two sheep, the two goats, the two animals that were brought both as Karban Pesach and as Karban Chagiga. And then he proceeds to explain every stage of the Chagiga, how it represents in his mind the Avodas HaKarbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. And I'll concede at the outset that the connections are not necessarily the most obvious. They're oftentimes based on, you know, a Gemara or Medrash where perhaps the connection is somewhat esoteric. But just very briefly, just to give you some idea, he suggests that the Shunra, which ate the Gadja, the Shunra refers to the Chabura, the group that had to eat the Karban Pesach. You can only eat it as part of a Chabura. The Kalba that ate the Shunra, he suggests, refers to the restrictions on eating the Karban Pesach, namely Chatzos, they had to finish by Chatzos. The Chutra, the stick that hit the Kalba, he says, refers to the Evarmu Pidarim, the fats of the animal that were burned on the Mizbeach throughout the night, even past Chatzos. The Nura, the fire, refers to the fire of the Mizbeach. The Maya, the water, refers to the waters of the Kiyor that the Kohen would wash himself with coming back to the Beis HaMikdash early morning to remove the ashes from the Mizbeach. The Torah, the oxes, the oxen, refers to the Karbanos that were brought the following morning in the Beis HaMikdash. The Shochet were Klal Yisrael who would take care of their Karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. Malach HaMavis was the Sar Shel Esav, those oppressors of Klal Yisrael who brought about the Golos. And of course, Kadosh Baruch Hu is the one who's going to ultimately restore the Avodas HaKarbanos to the Beis HaMikdash as it was in previous years. So again, the connections I'm not going to go into right now. Some are not as obvious as perhaps one would hope, but the idea is the same. We open the Haggadah with a preface in Aramaic, the vernacular from Golos Bavel, reminding ourselves of Yerushalayim of previous years, and Lo'alas Yerushalayim al-Rosh Simchasi, concluding with an Achama of Hashata Hachal Hashanah Baba Ard Yisrael. And we conclude, says the Chassam Sofer as well, with a paragraph in the vernacular from Golos Bavel, once again reminding ourselves of the Avodas HaKarbanos, and concluding with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, also HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come and restore us to the Avodas HaKarbanos in the Beis HaMikdash once again, Bemheir B'Yameinu. Okay, so that's just the opening and I guess the conclusion of the Haggadah. Okay, second thought. Early on in the Haggadah, after the Ma'an Ashtana, the question is posed, Ma'an Ashtana, four questions. The first answer given is Avadim Hayinu, that we are celebrating tonight because we were slaves, we were redeemed. And then, the very next paragraph, Ma'aseh Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Yeshua, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, Rebbe Akiva, Rebbe Tarfon, Shaim Mesubim ben Nebrak. They were all in Bnei Brak. So I heard a very beautiful pshat on a tape from Rabbi Isaac Bernstein quoting the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan has a commentary on the Haggadah called Leil HaShimurim, and he says the following. Question he asks is, why is it that all of these Tanoim were gathered in Bnei Brak? Bnei Brak was the residence of Rabbi Akiva. Some of these Tanoim who were present were Rabbi Akiva's Rebbeim. Rabbi Elazar, for example. Why did the Rebbeim go to Rabbi Akiva, who was the Talmud? The Talmud should at least go to the Rebbeim, not the other way around. Furthermore, the question is asked that Rabbi Elazar himself, in Masechta Sukkah, writes that he is critical of those who leave their homes for Yom Tov, I guess leaving their family behind, they are depriving the family of Simchas Yom Tov to a certain degree. And here we have Rabbi Elazar himself leaving his home in Lud, I believe it was where he lived, going to Bnei Brak, not only out of town, but to his Talmud's house. Have his Talmud come to him. Have Rabbi Akiva come to the Rebbe. Why the other way around? So Rabbi Bernstein quoted the Aruch HaShulchan. I don't have the Sefer, the Aruch HaShulchan on the Haggadah, but a beautiful, beautiful pshat. He says as follows. The Aruch HaShulchan suggests that Rabbi Akiva, we know from a famous story at the end of the Maseches Makos, had a particular talent and quality that his colleagues respected him for and appreciated. Famous Gemara Makos tells us the very conclusion of the Gemara Maseches Makos, Daf Chaf Dalet Amud Beis, story of starts with Chavdal Amud Aleph, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Yeshua are two of the Tanoim who are here in this Haggadah story as well. And they're mentioned here in the Gemara Makos along with Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Gamliel. They were walking together and in Yerushalayim, and they see on Har Habayis a fox coming out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua start crying, Rabbi Akiva smiling. They say to him, why are you smiling? So Rabbi Akiva says to them, why are you crying? They answer, what do you mean? Hazar HaKarev Yumas, if a non-Kohen walks into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's going to be sentenced to death. And now there are foxes going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, we shouldn't cry. So Rabbi Akiva says, L'kachani matzachik. Why? Because, says Rabbi Akiva, once I see that the Nevuah of Uriah has been fulfilled, L'chein beglalchem tzion sode techaresh, that Har Habayis has become desolate, so now I know that the Nevuah of Zechariah will also be fulfilled. Od yeshu v'zekenem u'zekenos b'chovis Yerushalayim. That there will be a time when the Jewish population in Yerushalayim will be restored to its original glory and original glory. So what do we see from this Gemara Makos, says the Aruch HaShulchan? Rabbi Akiva was the one who, out of all the Tanoim, had this optimistic outlook that even when things were as bad as they could seem, as they could be, even when the situation was as dire and as desolate and as bleak as ever before, Klaus were at the very bottom of the pit, in the middle of Golus and suffering, he still had the optimistic outlook, the ability to see the future and the brighter future as well. So the Aruch HaShulchan suggests, here we are in the Haggadah, describing a story that happened in the lifetime of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva lived in the time of the Roman persecutions, as we know from the stories of Asuriga and Malchus, when they were not allowed to learn Torah, they were not allowed to perform numerous mitzvahs. They were being harassed, persecuted, terribly killed. Torah was literally, fighting with its back against its wall for survival amongst the Jewish people. You know, how bad, how much worse could the situation get? And now it comes time for Lel HaSeder, Pesach night, when we're supposed to be besimcha, celebrating Geula and Cherus. What kind of Cherus, what kind of Geula when you can't even gather Talmid together to give a shir in public because the Romans will execute you on the spot? See, Tanaim figure says the Aruch HaShulchan, there's only one way we can celebrate. One way, one place, and one way we can celebrate the Lel HaSeder, the Chag HaGeula, the Chag HaCherus, that's with Rabbi Akiva. This individual has that optimistic outlook, that ability to, as the Gemara Makos says, Nicham Tanu, Akiva Nicham Tanu, he has the ability to comfort us. He has the ability to enable us to see the brighter future, despite the terrible persecutions of right now. That's the one place we can go for Pesach, to celebrate Chag HaGeula as appropriate. And hence they went to Rabbi Akiva in Bnei Brak. Very beautiful, beautiful pshat.
Do we know if the story took place before
or after? Before, after what?
The story of Gemara Makos.
Good question. That I don't know. it's a great question. There are a few. Yeah, there's one there about walking walking together. They hear the Kol Hamona Shalomi.
Right. I'm curious if the fact that they went to what he calls, as a reaction to this. He demonstrated his amuna. He could uplift them.
I don't know. It's an interesting question. Now, do we know when this mice in the Haggadah actually happened? With Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva v'Tachon, in comparison to that Gemara and Makos. I don't know. Interesting question. I don't know. I thought a very, very nice, companion vort to that one, so to speak, was a thought that I saw from Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch, on the very next section in the Haggadah, the Dalet Banim, Rasha Mahu Omer, what does the Rasha say? So the Pasuk quoted is Moha Avoda Hazos Lachem. So where is this Pasuk? Moha Avoda Hazos Lachem in Shmos. Take a look. Perek Sefer Shmos, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Chof Vav and Chof Zayin. You hear the Psukim, say, and this is the Pasuk that the Baal Haggadah identifies as the Rasha. Pasuk says, V'hoyo ki yomra aleichem b'neichem, when your children will say to you, Moh avodah hazos lachem, what is this work that you are doing? Right? That's the Rasha, Mahu Omer. Lachem v'lo lo. So the response given in the Chumash, which is not the response quoted in the Haggadah, the response given in the Chumash is, V'amartem zebach pesach hula Hashem, you shall say it's a zebach pesach, sacrifice of Pesach to Kadosh Baruch Hu, because he passed over our homes in Mitzrayim and saved us. So our first notes, as do many others, that in the Pasuk, in the response, Va'amartem Zevach Pesach, there's no mention of Va'amartem Elov, you should say to him, it's just Va'amartem Zevach Pesach. Famous pshat that's quoted is why? Because the Rasha is someone who's interested in mocking, making fun. Ma'avod Azos Lachem, what are you doing all this for? He's not really interested in an honest intellectual discussion. And so we don't respond to him. We don't say V'amarta Elov as we find elsewhere by the other Dalabanim. V'amartem, just say it. Not to him, because to him there's no point in responding, because he's clearly not interested in hearing what you have to say. You might be able to present him with the most logical, cogent, philosophical arguments in favor of mitzvah and Torah, and it's not going to help. He's not interested. Doesn't say V'amarta Elov. So then who are you saying it to? Says Rav Hirsch. V'amartem, you say it to yourself. Why to yourself? V'ilho pshat. He says, you say it to yourself because you have to be mechazik yourself in the face of the mockery and the verbal attacks and assault of others. At a time when others are making fun and looking and mocking what you're doing, it's not going to help to reason with them. They're not interested in reasoning with you. But rather, you have to strengthen yourself. You have to tell yourselves, remind yourselves why we're doing it. Amartem, say to yourselves, Zevach Pesach Hul Hashem, because Pasach Al Bateinu B'Mitzrayim, that's Bateinu Hitzil. Strengthen yourselves, that you should continue to do the mitzvahs besimcha despite those who are mocking you. But there's more than just that, he says, Rafersh. When you strengthen yourself and your own avoda and what you're doing, even in the face of those that are mocking you, ultimately that itself is the greatest, surest way to get them to come back to tshuva. Because if despite their mockery and their poking fun, they see that you are still enjoying it and living life of Torah mitzvahs besimcha, that's what's going to get them ultimately. You know, when they see you right now very happy with what you're doing, it's going to irk them deep down. It's going to bother them that they left and you didn't. And when they see you continuously really enjoying a fulfilling life of Torah mitzvahs, that more so than any other philosophical argument will one day be precisely that which will draw them back into the fold. Very beautiful pshat. Then Rav Hirsch says, if you look at the Mechilta in Parshas Bo, and those two psukim, V'hayah ki yomru aleichem b'neichem, when your children will say to you. So the Mechilta says, and I think Rashi quotes this as well, the Mechilta says, Rashi quotes part of it, the Mechilta says, B'sura ra'a nisbasru yisra ba'usa sha'a. At that time when God said, when your children will say to you, what is this work that you're doing? They received bad tidings. In this pasuk, they were essentially being told that one day your children are going to be so far from the Torah, they're going to say, oh, what is this all about? They're not going to be involved and appreciative of what Torah Avod is all about. The Yeshomrim, some say, says the Medrash, this pasuk was not bad news that your children are going to be so far one day from Torah mitzvos. It was good news. Why good news? Shehen asidin liros banim uvnei banim lahem, that they will one day see children and grandchildren. That's what Rashi quotes. Rashi says on the pasuk vayikoda amba yishtachavu, they bowed al besuras hageula, because they got this good news that they'd be redeemed, they'd come to Eretz Yisrael, and Besuras Haban, that they'll have children. So, Rav Hirsch asks, they were happy to hear that they're going to have children and grandchildren. Did they really think that out of 600,000 men and 2 million Jews, they weren't going to continue past this generation? Did they all be wiped out within a generation or two? What do you mean they were so grateful for the Besuras Habanim of Vnei Banim? That they were so grateful for this Besura Tova. What was the Psura Torah about the Banim and Bnei Banim that they heard? So first suggests as follows. He says, because what the Mechut is trying to say is that even if and even when children might turn away from Avodas Hashem, but nevertheless, one has to always be optimistic that if not the children, then the Bnei Banim and the grandchildren will see a revival of Ruchnius and Torah observance. He says the Besura Tova here that they were happy to receive is that even if Yom Aleichem Beneichem, Ma Avodas Aslachem, your children won't be as appreciative of Torah life as you are, but nevertheless, as the Mechilta says, they viewed it as a Besura Tova, there was Banim of Bnei Banim, because they were confident that Torah observance in Klal Yisrael would continue. That even when there's a religious decline, they still have the confidence that as long as we strengthen our observance, from Matam Zevach Pesachu LaHashem, it's not going to end with us. It's going to continue beyond the next generation, if not the next generation, the second generation. Because he said they had this optimistic outlook that Ruchnius might come in cycles. There'll be a generation which will have a decline in Ruchnius, but there will be a resurgence thereafter. And our first officer is writing, in his words, this progressive younger generation, he says, referring to his time in Germany, I guess the 1870s, 1880s, when the reform was at its, you know, at its peak in Central Europe, making inroads everywhere. He was telling his observant followers, don't be disillusioned. There's always optimism. Even when Ruchnius seems to be on the decline, it will come back, or there will be a resurgence of it. But it's similar to the idea that we said just before, from the Aruch HaShulchan and Rabbi Kiva, that even when things look, be it spiritually bleak, physically bleak, there's always optimism and always hope for a resurgence, if not now, shortly b'meher b'yameinu. So that was the thought of Rav Hirsch on the Rasha, the Ben HaRasha. Just today, I heard a very interesting thought from Rav Tursky on the Ben HaChacham. In our Haggadah, the Chacham asks, what are all these statutes, these chukim, these mishpatim, these eidos? And the response is, Ein maftin achar pesach avikomin, you're given a very detailed, advanced shir on Hilchos Pesach. Okay? Very fitting for a Chacham to have, you know, the detailed, nuanced lecture of what you're allowed to do, not allowed to do at the Lel HaSeder. Rav Tursky points out that if you look in the Yerushalmi says that the answer for the Ben HaChacham is, Ki b'chozdek yad hotzi'anu Hashem mi'Mitzrayim. Which is very strange. Our Haggadah has that pasuk, Ki b'chozdek yad hotzi'anu Hashem mi'Mitzrayim, as the answer given to the Tam, to the simple Jew. Simple Jew asks you, what's this all about? Mazos. You tell him, the Chosikyar, God took us out of Egypt. He based Avodim. Why in the Yerushalmi does Yerushalmi present that answer to the Ben HaChacham? To the Chosikyar, Ar Hashem Mitzrayim, based Avodim. That's a very simplistic approach. God took us out of the house of slaves. Why is that for the Ben HaChacham? Why is that an answer befitting a Chacham? So Tversky suggested the following thought. He said, because a Chacham is one who recognizes that even though at times certain details and specifics in life might be very confusing and obscure, sometimes you confront questions, crossroads of decision, where even the Chacham is struggling, doesn't know this way, that way, what's the right way to go, what's the right decision to make. It's not always so simple, even for the most chachamim amongst us. But a chacham is one who, despite those occasional moments of doubt and confusion in life, will never ever lose sight of the clarity of his ultimate goals and guideposts in life. Even when a Chacham is confronted with a decision in which he is in doubt about, but ultimately he comes back with a great degree of clarity and never loses sight of his ultimate priorities in life. So perhaps Yerushalmi is saying that if the Chacham is confused by certain details, specifics, Eidos, Chukim, Mishpatim, but he's one who ultimately you tell him, whether you have questions or not, you have something you're confused by, some complexities in this halacha or that, this life decision, that life decision, but you have the ability to always recognize and keep in the forefront of your mind that your ultimate priorities are, remember, and he said this in the context of a broader thought, which is, I guess, relevant to Pesach as a whole, of Yetzias Mitzrayim as a whole. He said it's very interesting to note that when God introduces himself, so to speak, at Har Sinai, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, right, God hands Klal Yisrael his business card, and what does it say? It says, God, home phone number, address, and here's my job. What do? I took you out of Egypt. So the Rishonim will ask, God's introducing himself the first time. He should have said, God, occupation, creator. That's more basic, right? Why is God's occupation on this business card redeemer? That's like, once you create, then you redeem. You got to create first. So there's different suggestions that are given. Tversky suggested that perhaps the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes himself as Asher Hotzasichem Me'eretz Mitzrayim Me'beis Avodim, the fact that he emphasizes the Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we find this again in Parshas Bahar, I think it is, Avodai Heim Asher Hotzasi Osal Me'eretz Mitzrayim, God refers to Klal Yisrael as my servants, my slaves. Why the emphasis on Avodai Heim? I mean, they're my creations. That's how I acquired them. Why is God staking claim to us as his Avodim because he took us out of Egypt? You're my Avodim because I created you. So Tversky said, the pshat is, based on the Gemara in Brachos, Gemara says the story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Rosh HaSanhedrin, whose son was very ill. And Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa davened for Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's son, and he received a refuah shleima. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in commenting on that, said, had I been davening all day, it wouldn't have helped. Chanina ben Dosa davened, that made a difference. So his wife said to him, what, is he greater than you are? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai responded very interestingly. He said, no, not necessarily he's greater than I am, but I am like a sar lifnei hamelech, he is like an eved lifnei hamelech. Now I'm the president's prime minister, his top cabinet minister, and he is the eved. He's the secretary, so to speak. Meaning, someone might be the most prominent person in the country, second to the king or the president, but when he wants to meet with the president, he has to call the secretary to make an appointment. The eved, yeah, he's got an office job. He works for the president or for the prime minister or for the king. But when he wants to talk to the president, he just walks right into his next door office. Can I have a word with you a second, sir? Meaning an eved is somebody who maybe not as officially prominent, but has the access and the intimate relationship that someone else even more prominent might not enjoy. So Tversky suggested that God is emphasizing you're my avodim, meaning don't forget Klal Yisrael, that you have that intimate relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, you have that dvekas, that closeness that nobody else has, and that should be the focus to enhance that closeness, that relationship, that accessibility that you have, the intimate relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And so I guess the idea being that the Yerushalmi says, you tell the Ben HaChacham, the most basic thing you have to know is, God took us out of Mitzrayim, and therefore we always have that access to him, that familiarity with him, that intimacy with God. Don't ever lose sight of that. Questions, yes, questions, no, but this is the most basic thing you got to keep in mind. That was Rav Tversky's thought on the Yerushalmi's.
Therefore, Redeemer was more important than Creator.
Right, because in terms of our ongoing relationship with God. We have that special relationship that the other creations of the world don't have. The Goyim were also created by God, but they're not His Avodim. That's why God stresses, I took you out of Mitzrayim, not them. You have more of an intimacy with me than they do. Okay, the Gemara then proceeds, the Haggadah then proceeds. At the end of the Elishol, you tell him, Bavur ze asah Hashem li v'tesim Mitzrayim. And then immediately following that answer that you give the Ein Deilishol, not really the answer, it's the Apsachlo. You tell him, you without him even asking for it. You tell him, Bavur ze asah Hashem li. The Haggadah then says, Yochem Erosh Chodesh, maybe you should tell him from Erosh Chodesh. Maybe you should tell him, you know, Erev Pesach. No, Bavur ze. Lo amarti ela b'sha sheish matza umor munachem lufanecha. Should be dafka at the Leil HaSeder. Why? So the Chasam Sofer says the point is as follows. Very interesting, interesting thought that he has. He says, in general, when it comes to chinuch habanim, the Torah wants us to teach as a result of a question. When there's a question, that means the child's curiosity is piqued. And if he's wondering about something and curious about something, and then you give him the explanation, he's more bound to remember it. You simply come in and start shooting information at him. You know, I'm not interested in it, I'm not going to listen to it, I'm not going to hear it, I'm not going to remember it. I want to know something. Oh, then that's an opportunity to teach him, he'll remember it. At the end of the initial, he's not asking. If he's never going to ask, he's never going to learn. So you got to tell him at a certain point. When do you tell him? Bavur zeh. Only when the matzah mor is menachem lefanecha. Why? So Chasam Sofer says, because you have the matzah mor here right now. If you tell him all the time, it's going to be not so exciting to him. You tell him dafka lo haseder once a year, when there's matzah mor on the table, and then you tell him bavur zeh asah Hashem li. If you tell him only occasionally, seldomly, once a year, and when there's the items on the table, that makes it easier to remember. There's more of a schadshus, more of an excitement, more of an interest. And the idea being, you want to combine the educational component of the lessons you give your children with the excitement of the tangible in front of them, and by making it only once a year, not me be'ojom, not me Rosh Chodesh, but once a year, Pesach night, it's a new thing, it's a schachos, that makes it more exciting. Couple other short thoughts before we conclude. Interesting comment by the Chasam Sofer, who says, well, we begin with Avraham Avinu, and then we proceed to Metchila of the Avodah Zarah Hayavaseinu. So very short insight. He says, why is it necessary to point out also Metchila of the Avodah Zarah Hayavaseinu? Very simply, because if all you said was Avraham Avinu, One might ask, well, why did you need to put us into Avdus just to get us out of Mitzrayim? Don't put us into Avdus to begin with. So for that we answer, Metchila Ov Devarazor HaYavaseinu. We, before Shibud Mitzrayim, were once upon a time Ov Devarazor. We needed Shibud Mitzrayim to purify us from that Avarazor from beforehand, to enable us to then come to Matan Torah and to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, moving on. Not right before, but I guess historically we had that in us. And we need to have that Biro and Libun, he says, to get it out from us. Meaning, the idea being that, he's basically saying this, a Yisod that others say as well, that if the answer to why Manashtana is simply Avodim Hayinu, the follow up question would be then, well, why put us in the Avdus to begin with? So Metchila of the Avodah Zarah is saying, no, there was a value to the Avdus in and of itself. Okay. That's what he's saying essentially. To purify us from whatever we had that needs to be purified. Okay, so there was a mile to the Avdus itself, but then we're thankful also not just for the Avdus, but for the Gula that followed. Okay, we conclude the paragraph with V'gam ha'esagoy asher yavodu danonochi v'achreichein yetzu birchush gadol. God promises they'll leave Mitzrayim with great wealth. Merely followed by v'hisha amda. V'avosein v'lanu. That's what stood for us for generations. That despite the attempts of Goyim to destroy us, God has rescued us. What's v'hisha amda? It. What's the it? What's v'hisha amda? It stood for us. It stood up for us. What's that referring to? So where's Torah mentioned in the previous paragraph? The previous phrase was, v'gama sagoy sh'avodu danonochi v'acharichen yetzur b'chush gadol. So where is the Torah? I mean, you're right, but where is the Torah there? So the...
Rechush.
Oh, what's the rechush? Money? How does that help me?
No, that's what the rechush was
supposed to be. Oh, very good, very good. So I heard today, Willard quoted a Dubna Magid, who says the following mashal. He says very simply, you know, a young child works, you know, for his first paying job. You know, his neighbor asks him to help him out one morning. You know, clean up the backyard, and he pays him a few dollars for it. So he gives him, $5 bill to the kid. It's a piece of paper. He's all upset. So he goes complaining to his father. The father tells the neighbor, do me a favor, take the $5 bill to the bank and just get 100 brand new shiny pennies and give it to the kid. The kid now is thrilled. So the market says, you know, as children, sometimes that which is shiny and bright and enticing, it could be 100 pennies, not worth as much. It still makes it more exciting for a kid. He says, Kadosh Baruch Hu promised Klal Yisrael v'achrechen yetzur b'chush gadol. He meant the Torah, as you pointed out. Torah is yikar him epninim. Its value is beyond imagination. The Klal Yisrael didn't appreciate it. Chassid didn't appreciate it right away, the Torah as the Rechush Gadol. So God asks Moshe Rabbeinu, please, Dabrina ba'azni ha'am, v'yishalu ishmer e'u, let them ask the Mitzrayim for some jewelry. So Rash quotes Chazal say, God was afraid, I don't want the Jews to say that I didn't fulfill the Achrechen Yetzu Rechush Gadol. So we usually read that Rash, and we think, God saying, you know, I made this promise to Avram, I got to keep it. I don't want them to say that, I'm not keeping it, so tell them please to ask for jewelry. Says the B'nai, no, it's not pshat. The pshat is, of course God was going to keep the promise. The promise was Matan Torah. Go to Har Sinai, get the Karim et Pnim, get the most valuable gift in the world, the Torah itself. But I'm afraid they just won't appreciate that and recognize that as the Rechush Gadol. They recognize that, you know, the jewelry is the Rechush Gadol. So please do me a favor, just so they shouldn't say anything, ask for some jewelry as well. So the B'nai says, that's why the previous paragraph concluded with Achrechen Yetzir Rechush Gadol. As you pointed out, Sarah, therefore, v'hisha amda, that rechush gadol, the Torah, is what then stood up for us throughout Galus to stand up for us and to save us from the Goyim. Finally, one last beautiful pshat that I also heard in this tape from Isaac Burdenson, quoting the Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshiva's Gates of Avraham Gurvich, said the following. Right before the Dayenus, before the Ilu Hotzianus, we prefaced that paragraph with Kama Ma'alos Tovos La Mokam Aleinu, which always we assume means Kama Ma'alos Tovos La Mokam Aleinu. How many wonderful, kind acts God performed. Aleinu meaning what?
To us.
For us. Question though is, Aleinu does not mean to us or for us. It should be Kama Malos Tovos that God performed Lanu, Bishvilanu, Aleinu. What's Aleinu? Upon us. Doesn't fit. What's the pshat? He said a beautiful explanation. He said, if you look in, you know, in Chazal, in the Gemara, when the Gemara uses the phrase, you know, Allah, or Allah, Allah implies that someone has a lien upon someone else. He has a claim against him. I have a taina on you, so to speak. But the word aleinu, upon us, is used in Chazal often in the context of one person has a lien on someone else. He has a claim against him. That person owes him money, owes him something. So how does he read this phrase? If Avram Gurovitz reads the phrase, Kama malos tovos lamakom aleinu, that because of all the good that God did for us, we now owe him in return, so to speak. For all those malos tovos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu aleinu, it's a debt we now have to repay. Because the more God does for us, the more we have to show our appreciation in kind by responding through Avodas Hashem, Limud HaTorah, Shmiras HaMitzvos. So he quoted a fascinating shot from the Malbim on the paragraph in Hallel, Hallelu es Hashem kol goyim, shabuchu kol ha'umim. So what does the phrase mean? Everyone has a responsibility to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Malbim that not just the Jews who were saved by God, but even the goyim themselves, who at one point in time were taken by Sancheirev into captivity and exiled, they also ultimately were saved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They also have an obligation to pay back that gratitude, so to speak. Okay, so both Jews and non-Jews have an obligation, Halus Hashem Kol Goyim, to save HaKadosh Baruch Hu for his Yeshuas that they benefited from. Then says the Malbim, so Hodu Hashem Kitov means that all the nations should thank God for his goodness and kindness to them. What comes next? Yomar Na Yisrael. Well, what do you mean Yomar Na Yisrael? You just told me Hodu Hashem Kitov. Why now Yomar Na Yisrael? Kilolam Chasto. We just said that already. You just said Hodu Hashem Kitov, Kilolam Chasto. Now you're saying Yomar Na Yisrael, Kilolam Chasto. We just did that. Says the Malbim, the Pshat in Tehillim is, that not only is it enough for the Goyim and the Jews together to say Hodu Hashem Kitov, Kilolam Chasto, but now after that as well, Yomar Na Yisrael, Klal shall have an additional obligation to give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Because they have benefited even more from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kindness. What follows after that? Yomar Na Beis Aaron. Even after Klal Yisrael offers their Hodot to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Beis Aaron, the Kohanim also have to respond with an added additional Hodot. Why? Because Chovas Lavavos writes, says the Malbim, that Klal Yisrael have Tayag Mitzvahs which the Goyim don't have, because Klal Yisrael were the beneficiaries of kindness and chesed that the Goyim were not beneficiaries of. The Kohanim in Klal Yisrael have even more mitzvos than the rest of Klal Yisrael have, because they received the Matnas Kahuna, Chavdal Matnas Kahuna. So says the Chovas Lavavos, Bnei Aaron, who received Chavdal Matnas Kahuna, have 24 additional mitzvos that are incumbent only upon Kohanim. And finally, Yomru Na Yirei Hashem, says the Malbim, the Beis David, Mishpachas Beis David, who received even greater kindness from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they have even additional responsibilities. A melech has to have a Sefer Torah that he keeps with him in his house to read it all the days of his life. And there's more mitzvos incumbent upon a melech that are not incumbent upon other Jews. Because the more kindness a person is recipient of from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more mitzvos you have, and the more you have to demonstrate your gratitude in response. So that says, Rav Gurovitz says, Pshat, Kama Malas Tovos Lamakom Aleinu, God has performed so many Maisim Tovim and Chesed for us, to us, that now it's Aleinu. It's a debt that we have to repay. And he even suggests that perhaps the significance of the previous paragraphs, we find in Machlokas Tanoim, Yosef Aglili, Abelezer, Abikiva, how many Makos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu bring on the Mitzrayim, who cares? What's the point of it? 200, 250, 50, I mean, it's just numbers. says, no, pshat is because the more that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us to the Mitzrayim, the more gratitude we have and the obligation we have to respond. He even suggested, not mistaken, that the Bahag says that of the mitzvos asay in Taryag, there's 248. 48 of those are community incumbent mitzvos. 200 are individual mitzvos asay. So he suggested that that might be what the machlokas is all about. How many makos would the mitzvim receive? 50, 200, 250 might have relevance for how many mitzvos asay Klai Yisrael became obligated in response as gratitude to that Maisim Tov HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed for us at Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, I think we can conclude there.